This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. One of the state's largest environmental advocacy groups is holding, I guess, what you could consider one of the state's largest meetings this coming weekend. We're talking about the Hoosier Environmental Council's 14th annual Greening the State House. And with us to talk about it, we have Executive Director Jesse Carbonda. Jesse, thank you for joining us on Lakeshore Public Radio.
Wonderful to be with you, Chris.
Well, for folks that are not familiar with what Greening the State House is all about, will you please briefly explain, and then particularly the fact that this is another one of the events that usually is held in person with an opportunity for a lot of people to do some networking, but unfortunately it's tough to do during the pandemic, I know.
That's right. And by way of quick background, Chris, the Hoosier Environmental Council is a statewide environmental organization that works to advance environmental health and justice, protect land and water, and accelerate climate solutions. And our event, Greening the State House, is entering its 14th year. It is, when it has met in person, been the largest gathering of environmental-minded Hoosiers in the entire state in a given year. For this year and last year, it's been virtual. And basically, Chris, what we want to do is get people fully aware of the big environmental issues facing the state of Indiana in 2022. We want them to network and have a tremendous opportunity to get to meet nonprofit and green business leaders across Indiana and to be inspired by an amazing array of eco-entrepreneurs and environmental professionals and environmental activists that are going to be there. Mm-hmm.
I know typically at the Greening the State House events, you have an opportunity to find out more about the general subjects of urban and rural environmental justice and some of the issues that the state of Indiana faces in respect to those problems. Sometimes you find out about some interesting comments and remarks that are made. Sometimes they turn out to be just interesting topics that are brought up. This year in particular, I'm sure in light of the fact that we not only have our own state problems with the environment, but we're also very seriously considering about climate policy, and that, of course, because of the just completed worldwide campaigns.
Absolutely, yeah. We're covering a great breadth of topics over Greening the State House, which is going to be on Friday, November the 19th, and Saturday, November the 20th. And you've touched on some of those panel discussions that we're going to have. We're going to be having one dedicated to rooftop solar, one related to environmental justice, one related to wetlands, and then one related to climate protection.
I know sometimes that the topics come up here about pollution issues here in Northwest Indiana in particular and elsewhere in the Hoosier State, but a lot of times these are topics that you get to cover during the Greening the State House events too, right?
That's right. You know, it's all about getting people prepped for the next legislative session. We want people to come away and say, look, I've got myself empowered to know exactly what are going to be the top five issues, say, in the next legislative session. And by being empowered with that information, I have the confidence to be able to reach my state representative and state senator and say, you know, these are the issues I care about. This is the position we'd like you to take. And it begins to develop a meaningful relationship with those lawmakers. And that really needs to happen before the legislative session, because by the time you get to the legislative session, the lawmakers are so overwhelmed because they're having to digest dozens and dozens of bills, attend, you know, three or four different committee hearings, attend a whole array of lobbying events and so forth. So GTS is an incredible way to get the environmental community across Indiana very attuned to the big issues so that they can get going and talking to the lawmakers right away.
Jesse, is this a good opportunity for people who are maybe new to the idea of being advocates for the environment around the state, a chance to learn on some of the finer points of how to be a good advocate and how to be able to engage with state legislators, your own state legislator, for example, in your neighborhood and in your district, to help kind of push the idea along of making sure that the lawmakers know what the real issues are?
Yes, that's absolutely right. You know, it's interesting that Greening the State House is a blend of sharing knowledge about the big issues while at the same time improving people's skills. So we'll have at least 3 to 4 opportunities over the course of the 2-day conference, which again is virtual, and one can sign up at heckweb.org/GTS. Mm-hmm. There'll be at least 3 to 4 opportunities to talk to seasoned staff at HEC about how to improve one's advocacy skills. Maybe you've never met with a lawmaker, like you said, Chris, and we'll give you the fundamentals of what's the best way to reach them. What should the nature of the message be? What are some preparation that you ought to do prior to meeting your lawmaker? And then on the other hand, you might have someone who's very seasoned in talking to their lawmaker. And in that case, you can ask a more sophisticated question like, what are good tips for writing a good letter to the editor? Or how can I marshal the people in my community to attend the third house meeting so that there's a strong contingent of environmental-minded Hoosiers who are talking about these issues in a town hall format?
Who are some of the major sponsors for the Greening the State House event this year, or some of the usual sponsors that help shape not only the event itself, but help people that are members, attendees, learn more about their particular issues? Who are some of the ones that are going to be involved this year?
Well, we've got 40 this year, which is incredible. 40 different nonprofit organizations and green-minded businesses. And, in terms of state-level organizations, you've got the League of Women Voters of Indiana, you've got Solar United Neighbors, Sierra Club, Hoosier Chapter. And then you also have several regional organizations, including Save the Dunes, Northwest Indiana Green Drinks, Solar United Neighbors, which also has an office in northern Indiana, and finally, the Michigan City Sustainability Commission. So there's a nice contingent from Northwest Indiana.
Right now, as we speak here at the first of the week, how many attendees have you got signed up here? And I know some people maybe make a decision near the end of the week toward the start of the sessions, which will be on Friday and Saturday of this week.
I think our numbers are around a couple hundred right now, and,
wow.
And we very much encourage you to attend. Again, hecweb.org/GTS, and there's a student discount.
That's something important, too, because we know not only college students, but high school students that are in very serious environmental activists like to attend these events, and this is their way to learn something as well. Like you say, pick up some tips on how to be a good advocate and when you have to talk with lawmakers. It's very important to know what to say and the right ways to say it and the right people to contact, to be sure. Do you think that this is going to turn out to be a very, very important event here in light of the fact that we've just finished up with the global event in Scotland?
Absolutely. There's we're going to actually have some remarkable young climate leaders who are going to give a very brief presentation about legislation that they want to advance in Indiana to really elevate the issue of climate change in our state. We do not have a state climate action plan in Indiana. And while there are several local governments that are seriously engaging on the issue of climate change, both Republican mayors and Democratic mayors, the conversation around climate change isn't talked about very much in the legislature. So we're going to have some young leaders from Confront the Climate Crisis, which originated out of West Lafayette, Indiana, to talk about what measures they'd like to pursue. And they're certainly motivated by what happened in Glasgow at the COP26 conference, in which the world came together for the 26th time to figure out how do we accelerate global coordination to significantly cut greenhouse gas emissions across the planet.
Jesse Carpanta is Executive Director of the Hoosier Environmental Council. Once again, the largest annual environmental policy conference for Indiana is called Greening the State House, and the 14th annual event is coming up virtually again because of the pandemic online. It'll be hecweb.org/GTS to find out more about the event and to be able to register for it. Jesse, thank you for being with us to tell us all about it. We hope this weekend's event's another big one.
Thank you so much for your support, Chris.
Coming up this afternoon, beginning at 3 o'clock, the Gary Public Transportation Corporation is going to host its Fall Summit. It's an opportunity for you to show up in person in Gary and learn more about what the leaders in local public transportation are going to be offering to riders all through Northwest Indiana this year. And with us to talk about it, we have the Planning and Marketing Director of GPTC, David Wright. And David, thanks for joining us in the program today.
It is always a pleasure, Chris.
Well, this event's coming up here, as we mentioned, begins at 3 o'clock this afternoon. It's going to be held in Gary. Tell us more about the particulars of the event and what's going to be covered so that people may want to check it out and come by. Oh, of course, don't forget to bring your mask. You do have to wear masks for this event.
Exactly. I was writing that in my notes just now. It's an open house for men. Because of that, we're going to be holding it at the Ivy Room in the Gary Public Library and Cultural Center in downtown Gary.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have a presentation and then a breakout tables with information and dialogue on specific subjects. We're also expecting pastries from Chef Blake Shelton. He is a local Gary baker, and he's about to be opening a store in a brick-and-mortar shop in the Miller Beach neighborhood of Gary.
It's an opportunity, I know, for people to learn more, maybe about a service they don't necessarily take advantage of, but they probably should know about because it's there for you all the time, 7 days a week. And if for some reason you need to get a bus, it's a way to be able to get around to the region here. It's not just the city of Gary, maybe we should say.
Right. We're talking about all our regional services, and we operate in 10 cities in northwest Indiana, from the Miller Beach area of Gary all the way to Hammond, from downtown all the way down to Crown Point. We're going to be talking about our fixed route system as well as our paratransit system, which people don't always, they don't always know about. And what we want to do, in addition to making sure people know that it exists, part of how we're doing that is by rebranding it. So it's not just a paratransit version of our GPTC service. We're going to be revealing the new brand for our paratransit system. We're calling it Access 219, and we'll have more information on that this afternoon.
Mm-hmm. When you look at the buses service, you're talking, of course, mainly about buses, but there are, of course, shelters all around for the bus stops so that people that want to catch the bus can stay in out of the weather and be able to catch the bus in some comfort. Is some of that going to be discussed at the event coming up today as well?
Yes. We've got a robust shelter installation program we're going to be starting in 2022, starting with repairing some of the shelters on the Broadway Metro Express. It's around that time where we need to start fixing up some of the shelters that have been damaged by car accidents or other incidents. And we're going to be starting that in 2022, as well as replacing old shelters in non-Broadway locations, not just in Gary, but throughout northwest Indiana in our system.
Mm-hmm. Do people seem to be taking more advantage of the service if they're outside the city of Gary, maybe like we mentioned in Hammond or East Chicago or some of the other cities that the service branches out to?
Actually, it's funny you should mention that, because with our technological advances that we've implemented in 2021, where we've got more mobile app usage, we're getting more people using our mobile apps, and part of this evening's event will be a how-to on how to navigate that mobile network. But because of that, we're getting a lot more information about where people are getting on and off.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just people getting on and off at bus stops in Gary, but pretty much every bus stop in northwest Indiana, in every area that we serve, we see a lot of activity, including, in particular, downtown Hammond, where we meet up with several of our routes, as well as routes from Pace Suburban Bus in suburban Chicago, and a lot of activity on the U.S. 30 corridor. So it's really amazing to see the impact we have in mobility now that we are able to see where people are using the activating their mobile passes, so we can actually get a visual pretty much just a few weeks after each activity.
Wow.
On where people are actually using the system. It's a lot of data. It's a lot of very useful data that we'll be using to help plan our services. But it pretty much confirms that people want to have that ability to use mobile apps, and we want to make it a lot easier for people to use the system.
We know that the last major improvements made to the GPTC system was the routes running on Broadway down into Crown Point and letting people get down to shopping areas down there, as well as making it around so they can make other connections to go into other parts of Lake County that you cover. Are you finding there are more people that are taking advantage of the Broadway route?
Yes. The pandemic obviously had an impact on ridership throughout transit globally, but the Broadway Metro Express and the feeder routes that we started when we launched that in 2018 are, you know, that ridership is coming back, and you can see it, like I said, with the visualization of the mobile activity. We're also, in addition to repairing the shelters that we installed in 2018, will be planning on making Broadway the first electric bus route outside of Indianapolis in the state of Indiana.
Wow.
Those new buses are expected to be on property in the spring of this year. We'll be providing some details on that and some visuals on that at the event.
Are these opportunities that the financial end have been handled by South Shore Clean Cities and other vendors and getting together and making the new buses available?
Exactly. We were able to take advantage of a Volkswagen mitigation grant with the assistance, the wonderful and successful assistance of South Shore Clean Cities. They've been a partner not just in writing that grant, but in implementing the service and helping us identify how we wanted to implement that project. We're going to be using the same bus manufacturer that manufactures our diesel buses, because 85% of the bus is about the same except for the drivetrain.
Right.
But they're very, very, the only emissions these buses are going to have is in the wintertime when the heat is running, because you want to keep people comfortable. But other than that, like during the winter, the spring, summer and fall months, this is going to be zero emissions bus.
That's great to hear.
And I'm really excited about that.
The GPTC Fall Summit is coming up this afternoon, beginning at 3 o'clock. It'll be held again in the Roma Ivy Community Room at the Gary Public Library and Cultural Center. And the exact address, if you want to make the trip, 220 West 5th Avenue in downtown Gary. And again, we should mention that it is a free event, open to the public, but don't forget to bring your mask, because there is some safety cautions that have to be made because of the pandemic. But if anybody wants more information, and certainly you'll have a lot of information available at the event, I'm sure, to let people know about all of the changes and the like that are going to happen here.
Yes, I really look forward to actually talking to people face-to-face, socially distanced, of course, and providing an update on what's going on, how we are going to be, how we continue to navigate the pandemic and all of the other subject matter. I really, really look forward to it.
David Wright is the planning and marketing manager for the Gary Public Transportation Corporation. Again, the Fall Summit gets underway at 3 o'clock this afternoon at the Gary Public Library and Cultural Center in downtown Gary. And David, thanks very much for the update, and looking forward to all the information that's going to come forth at the summit this afternoon.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk. Appreciate it.
Not long ago, we spoke with a farmer from New Buffalo, Michigan, who is a member of a Market Wagon family. He is a farmer, and he is helping to solve the global supply chain with his own artesian farm products. And he offers them up to the organization called Market Wagon. Market Wagon is one that helps transform the farm-to-table concept into a farm-to-front-door reality. And with us to talk about it, we have the co-founder, the CEO, and farmer himself, Nick Carter, to talk about Market Wagon. Nick, thank you for joining us on Lakeshore Public Radio.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
Will you take some time and tell us a little bit about the ideas behind Market Wagon and that, and how you and your founders got this thing started?
Yeah, the idea is enabling food producers to thrive in their local markets. We believe that one of the key things to that is access to the marketplace. There's a lot of consumers that would love to buy local food, love to patronize their local farmers. It's got to be convenient and easy to do. So we created an online farmers market where you can order direct from local farms online, and then we deliver it. So we have the logistics systems in place to do last mile delivery all the way to the consumer's doorstep. So it's just e-commerce grocery delivery to the doorstep, but with a local supply chain.
Now, how many farmers do you get to market with to be able to get their products out to the consumer that is interested in them?
Yeah, in the Chicago and Michiana area, we've got a couple hundred farmers and food producers that we're working with. And nationwide, there's about 2,000.
Wow. Where did the organization start? I know you're based in Indianapolis right now. Is this where it all started, in central Indiana?
It did. It started right here in central Indiana. I grew up farming here in north central Indiana. And today, our family farm is active on Market Wagon, and we're one of a couple thousand food producers that are thriving as a result.
Now, how many states are you in besides Indiana and in Illinois and Michigan, for that matter?
Yeah, we're in 15 states, stretching from the Twin Cities down to Atlanta.
in setting up such an interesting network as this, how much work has it taken to first establish the fact that you're out there and getting hold of the farmers that have the products? Are you finding that some people are actually getting hold of you and saying, hey, we've got a product here, we'd like to get it marketed through you?
That's actually where the majority of our growth comes from these days. Mm-hmm. When we first started in a new city, and we started in Chicago about a year ago, we have to do a lot of work to get the word out there. But once the producers are selling on Market Wagon and customers have found out about it, the word travels fast.
Yeah. Is there anything in particular that you look for when you reach out to farmers and want to take on their products to make them available to consumers? Anything in particular? Are you focusing primarily, for example, on organically grown material, foods and things like that?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
The organic certification is a little bit onerous and sometimes difficult and expensive for small farmers to actually accomplish. What we focus in on is transparency and relationship. We look for producers that are operating at a scale where they can maintain a relationship with their customers. They can chat with them on our platform online. They'll build followers on our platform, and you can connect directly with those producers.
Let's say that you take the website, marketwagon.com, and you'd like to find out more about a particular area. Do you just log into that or search by way of the website to find out if there's anything that happens to be available in, say, for example, Valparaiso, Indiana?
You go to marketwagon.com. You can just type in your zip code right there, and it'll show you all of the products that are available delivered to you. You can also browse the delivery map that's on the homepage there and take a look at it visually that way if you'd like. Either way, you'll end up with, as soon as you enter into the shopping, it's narrowing down only the product offerings that you can get delivered to you. So there's never any of that frustration mm-hmm. of, oh, this looks great, but that's in Kentucky or somewhere else.
You do actually get to find something local. Now, when you talk about local products, what range of products can you make available to somebody that's interested?
On our website, you will find pretty much every grocery category you can imagine. We have produce, which a lot of people always associate with farmers markets and local foods. And there's always fresh produce, even year-round. In the wintertime, we have greenhouses that are producing. But there's also eggs, meat, dairy. We've got delicious bottled milk that you can get delivered from a local Michigan creamery there. Mm-hmm. We have baked goods, heat and eat items, and anything that you can imagine.
Now, when it comes to the delivery, who handles that? Do the farmers themselves take care of that? Do you have somebody that you work with at Market Wagon to get that item happen to be delivered to somebody from the farm?
The delivery that will end up on your doorstep comes from a Market Wagon driver, and the producers, farmers, and food artisans are going to bring all of their orders once a week to our facility on a Thursday morning, and that's where they get aggregated together. So the beauty of it is you can place one order from dozens of different food producers. And you may get your eggs from one farm and your lettuce from another and the milk from yet another farm. And that's all coming in one delivery that we put together for you.
Now, if anybody's interested, where can they go to find out more about Market Wagon again? And in particular, to find out if there happens to be a local farmer that might be offering something that they can actually buy and have delivered to their home.
Anybody who's interested can just go to marketwagon.com. Right there on the homepage on marketwagon.com, enter your zip code, and you'll be shown the products that are available for delivery to you.
Nick Carter is the co-founder of Market Wagon. He's also CEO of the company, and he's a farmer himself. Nick, thank you very much, and we hope that it not only grows more than it already has here in Northwest Indiana and Michiana in general, but we hope to find out more about more farmers and more consumers that take on the Market Wagon concept. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
After months and months of self-care and protection and distancing, we have Thanksgiving and the winter holidays coming up not long from now. So it's now a good opportunity to talk about reminding youngsters about how important it is to connect with others and through acts of kindness and giving. No doubt about that. And with us to talk about it, the president and CEO of the Indiana Youth Institute, Tammy Silverman. Tammy, thank you for joining us on the program today.
Always my pleasure. Happy to be with you, Chris.
Well, it's really, really important, of course, that we keep remembering that we're ingrained in pro-social behavior. Even though it may be really difficult in the pandemic for it to show, it's still there, and we have to be sure that young people have that instilled in them, too.
You are 100% right, and that's part of, we know that even toddlers, young kids, show this inclination to help others. When they see someone in need, they'll lean in, and we know that that's part of our makeup as individuals and as humans. That being said, with everything having to do with the pandemic, obviously we've we've turned inward a bit, right? Within our families and our small circles, and our circles sometimes have gotten a little smaller. But as we're looking forward and as things become safer to look outward, it's important that we remind ourselves and our kids and that we model that it's important to be part of our communities and to look at how we can help those around us who might need a little more help or support.
Is it one of these opportunities that come up that maybe not necessarily from cradle, but pretty soon, I'm at a very young age, that children should be able to learn about these pro-social behaviors?
Absolutely. And again, it's the old idea of sharing, right? We talk to kids about share your toys, share your food, but then that can go beyond, you know, how do we share our time? How do we share things that we might not need anymore, such as, you know, and these don't have to be really complex interactions, but it can be donating food or sorting through, having your child help sort out their clothes that they've outgrown and then driving over and donating those to someplace that can put them to good use. So again, it's modeling, teaching, and then reaping the actual benefits. There are huge benefits to kindness, gratitude, and service to others.
Now, we've done this before where we kind of break things down by way of age groups. Let's do so with this idea as well, too. What kind of age-specific ideas do you have that we should cultivate the practice of service and giving?
Right. So elementary students, and you're right, scaffolding by age groups is always a good idea. And accommodating where they're at and meeting them where they're at. So elementary students, you know, they really start service projects thinking about maybe there's an after-school program, the Scouts, maybe there's something at their faith-based organization where they can learn some of those acts of kindness and giving and projects. And then, you know, when you talk to middle schoolers, you can talk to them about how they're situated in their community and their place in contributing and civic engagement. You can start talking about what that looks like for them, and then also what are some direct paths for them to have impact. Mm-hmm. We don't want kids of any age to think it's too big of an issue and there's nothing they can do about it. We want to break it down so that they're contributing. And then by high school, they can really lean into the complex problems in society and in their neighborhood, in our state, and even globally, and talk to them about ways they can help envision and be part of big solutions.
And I know by high school age, we've been surprised and pleased, at least, that some high schoolers are really able to understand some of these issues and can come up with some really good ideas to contribute, to be sure. And it's very important, I know, during the month of November, it's National Philanthropy Month, so it's great. I got an opportunity to kind of combine it with the holidays and bring these ideas up, right?
Absolutely. So thinking about how do we want to contribute, this is the time of year. You know, we talk about what we're thankful for, but also thinking about what things and gifts and supports we may have that others might not be able to engage in or have at hand. So how do we help make sure that thankfulness ripples out beyond our family? You know, one of the things that we didn't touch on that I'm glad you brought up, you know, sometimes kids, you know, oftentimes, I would say maybe even most of the time, they come up with new ideas or approaches that we have, as adults, haven't seen or haven't thought of. So it's really important that we engage them in the conversation and talk to them about what's of interest to them, what's on their mind, how would they like to show up and contribute in the community. Make sure they have a voice and ownership in their commitment.
Mm-hmm. What does some of the research show that these are important traits that young people should pick up from grown-ups that help them along so that they're able to become stronger and better adults when they grow up further?
Absolutely. So a few of them, just to run through them pretty quickly, is there's an increased level of happiness, caring, and emotional well-being. That acts of kindness, when performed by kids, actually form connections and that are associated with increased happiness. And so we know that there's been some challenges to that throughout the pandemic. So anything we can do to bring happiness to our kids and ourselves is a positive thing. There's also a greater sense of belonging and improved self-esteem, but there's actually a rush of endorphins that are related to helping others, and that can lead to a sense of pride, optimism, self-worth. There's improved health and reduced stress. There's increased feelings of gratitude. There's actually better concentration, which is a fascinating one to me, that kindness is actually connected with increased positivity and serotonin levels. And so that can result in better sleep, memory, and learning patterns.
I understand, too, that besides what adults can do themselves to help youngsters, they can rely on some very good community organizations to help teach them these things.
100%. Do not think that we have to go out and create new service projects. There are incredible organizations across every community. So think about, is your food bank doing something? Is your after-school program doing something? Is there a food drive within your school? So identifying those organizations that have missions and visions that are important to you and your family, and then leaning into those. You do not have to create it from scratch.
Tammy Silverman is the president and CEO of the Indiana Youth Institute. Thank you for the great advice and the great ideas that we should pass on to young people about being able to be better providers of care and giving to everyone. And the holidays just make it more important than ever. Thank you for being with us today to talk about it.
Always my pleasure. Thank you.
That's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Thanks for joining us, and we'll be back with you tomorrow.